besides Qatar. That's a very comfortable opinion. But I don't know if whether Qatar would agree with it. If you take a look at the Rambam, and you learn from Rambam. Rambam is the Pirush of the Masechet Avos. How many times he brings in Umatev Maimar Aristotle's? He brings in Aristotle's statements. Mm-hmm. So apparently the Rashi was more from the Rambam. It's pretty much that. But the Rambam didn't want to mention the names because he knew it was bad enough the way he did it already. But if you mention the names, it really just condemned all this far. So he said he came up with a statement, Shema HaEmes Mimi Shamrei. Shema HaEmes Mimi Shamrei. Listen to the truth of the matter, he said. That's why in the Yad HaChazak itself, in Hilchos Kiddush HaChedesh, the Rambam says, he brings down he says the whole Chachma of Kiddush HaChedesh, astronomy, he says, who devised it? You know?
The Greeks.
He says, it's all from the Greeks. So he says, and when it comes to the truth, he says, doesn't make any difference whether a Navi says it, Leishna Amrei Navi, Amin, or Leishna Amrei Omos. It makes no difference whether a Goy says it or whether a Navi says it. He says, because the truth, when it's verified, and can be demonstrated to be true, that means that this is an accurate name for them. And whoever said it makes no difference. In fact, it means that it's true. That's what any other side said. Okay. So, that's why, but still in all, the emotion is there. And also, there's another thing. There's a concept of pigeonholing. Like you say, well, he's a Platonist. He's a this, he's a that. You see, what does it mean, basically? It means that really there's no truth in any of them. It's just a matter of which one you want to choose. He's arbitrary, he chose one. Rambam didn't think that way. Rambam held that the person can arrive at this moment at the truth. Or a great deal of the truth. As a man is infallible, but that's his purpose in life. To arrive at as much truth as you could. So the Rambam didn't like to mention names, but as soon as he mentioned it, he's a great. What does that mean? The truth is not. The truth is right. Wrong, it's, what difference does it make? Pigeonholing is something which is, this, the very idea of pigeonholing presupposes the concept that it's all false, there's no virtue. So that's why I also like to do it, because there's an emotional reaction to a name. It's everything. But anyway, getting back to this point. I just want to give one illustration of what the method is. An illustration. See, we always look about the why and the what. And really, that's the cornerstone of the method. That's the cornerstone. Because when a person, the untrained mind, when it sees a phenomenon that it can't observe, immediately goes, why? Why should this be? The trained mind avoids that whole thing. It's true, he wants to find out why. But he knows that way of looking is a dead end. The trained mind just defines, what is going on here? What is going on here? See, the untrained mind just is astounded. No, kind of, hey, how's that work? So it can't move. It's paralyzed. The trained mind forgets about the astonishment, the whole business, but just think, what is going on? Is there anything here that we can see? Let me give you an example. And I'm going to give you an example from philosophy. I'm not interested in the philosophy per se. I just wanted to show you the method. Let's say, for instance, people ask, well, God gave man free will, right? A person can choose good or evil. And the end result, if he chooses the good, so he's rewarded. If he chooses the evil, so he suffers. So the question is asked, why did God have to do that? What's the purpose? Oh, so they say the purpose is that God wanted to reward man, wanted man to have a good. So the question is, if that's the case, so why doesn't he create everybody so he can? And automatically have the good. Why do they have to make this whole thing? He hasn't suffered, has to work for it, it's hard. Yes, he has things drawing in this way, things drawing in that way, he doesn't know whether to take Elamaza, he's pulled on all sides, doesn't know what to do, doesn't kind of flop in his face, doesn't know what to do. Why do you do it? Because it's very simple. Everybody has desire for the good, and they leave. And then everybody lives a wonderful life. Right? Okay, here's a question. Now, the average person, of course, when he sees that question, he's astonished, it's overwhelming, can't figure it out, he stops. How would you approach that question with a method? I'm only interested
why God did. You'd say, what did God do?
He's not a wise what man did.
Exactly what it was.
So what would you say?
Come
here. What would you say?
Well, first, you go with what man consists of, what his existence consists of,
what it exists. I know you have to go far back to its existence. All I want to do is show you how, with the method, you look at this question. It's a different question altogether. As a matter of fact, with the method, when you look at the question, it has an answer in it already. It has 50% of the answers there already.
I would look at it approaching what's the purpose of man having a free will? I mean, in the sense of why God gave it to him and what man is supposed to utilize with it. For example, the fact that man has good and bad will and he accomplishes good, and it's so much more of a greater accomplishment and so much more appreciated than if man weren't given the choice and he wouldn't have to strive for it.
All right. See, you have a good morning, Andy, but you're still on which way to go?
Why?
Why? That's not the method. Not the method. Yeah?
What's the relationship between the spire and the good?
And the good will.
And the good.
Okay? And the good. The spire and the good. Okay, so what would you say?
Well, really, it's not just the doing the good, because then if it's just the doing the good, then you're not going to make the good.
I'm sorry, but that's what was it?
So evidently it's something to do with the differentiation between the good and the bad.
Differentiation.
Evidently, the bad is created. If you're not the kind of bad, then that's where you get the scar for. It's not just for being a scar.
Yeah, it's for avoiding the evil. Avoiding evil, right?
Not just avoiding evil.
Yeah,
it's not just for achieving the good, but it's for achieving the good in the presence of evil.
That's true.
Achieving the good in the presence of evil.
That's
on the way. That's on the way.
Yeah, because like when you were you should need trach. When there's no trach around.
Right.
It's when you're in the situation that you could do the aveira and you don't do the aveira.
Right. That's a start. That's a start. So you start the approach already with the finding what's taking place. All right, could you go a little further? You go a little further. You're saying basically that what? How do you put it?
Yeah. It's choosing good in the presence of evil.
All right. Now it's choosing good in the presence of evil. But what is that? You still have to find what is that choosing good in the presence of evil. What does it mean? What does free will mean? Remember what free will is here.
You're only upon the cause.
The Rambam? That's right. Free will means that you are the cause. Free will means that there's no extraneous cause. But you are the cause. The cause is within you. Let's remember one thing that Rambam misunderstood, question about God, having God. That is totally different meaning what Rambam uses there. When people think. So the definition of free will is that you are the cause. The cause of you doing good is within you. Right, now, how would you rephrase the question? How would you rephrase the question?
I see what you mean.
In other words, what was the question? The question was, why did God have to create man? Right? To do, give him a choice, to do good. Why didn't he just create man? Why did he do good? What would you do? Now, that's a person that doesn't know the method asks a question like that. See, right away, it's the next question that doesn't know the method. Methodologically, what was the question?
Couldn't stay one for?
Okay. The question is, why did God create man with free will and then do good? Then he should do good. Why doesn't he create man right away to do good?
Then there's no free will.
Then there's no free will, okay.
What is the definition of man with free will? What is the concept of man having free will?
The concept is that he should be the cause of
his good.
In other words, when a person dies at the end of his life, so the good that he will achieve in the next world, it comes out, who was the cause of that good?
He was.
He himself. So now what is the answer to the question, why did God create man? Why did God create man?
Because God would have created man all good. The cause would not have been man, it would have been God.
In other words, it is the will of God that man should be the cause of his own good. Isn't that true? It is the will of God. It is God's will that man should be the cause of his own good.
So actually the first question you really should have asked is exactly what does it mean to have the right to choose the way?
Right. In other words, when you say free will, define what free will is. Right. Define for us. They say free will is that he's his own choice. Now the question takes on a whole different appearance. You don't ask anymore, well, why did God do this and that? What are you talking about? The question should be converted into a definition. You see right away, what's the definition? You see, in other words, this guy, he thinks without the method, he thinks like, why? He keeps bothering with why. Forget about why. What's happening over here? What's the following situation? What is the situation? Isn't the situation that man is the cause of his own good? Isn't that the situation we have here? Okay. So without even going any further into philosophy, you could ask another question. A question beyond it. Now, why is it that it's God's will that man should be the cause of his own good? That's another question. That's true. Another question. And it seems that there might not have been much progress. But I tell you that this progress makes all the difference. All the difference. Because in one case, there's a dead end. You can't budge. In the second way, you already have a formulation. So you have a proposition, proposition one. You might desire to go further. Beyond that, but why is it the will of God? If you ask that question why, then you have to answer that why with another what, just like you answered the first why. You understand what I mean? When you think of why, it can't be the infantile why. Why is this so? Why is this so? Well, that why is I want to change things around the way I want. See, that's just an infantile notion. The intellectual why is what is underlying this phenomenon. So therefore, when you say, instead of asking why did God do this, when you define what he did, it has a different question altogether. It takes on a different meaning. Is that
what you're doing? Is it all right?
No? Is it clear? You see it?
I think I should say it again.
We're just showing the way a person with method approaches a problem and the way a person without method approaches a problem. A person without method is just astonishing. It's his why? His why really means the why. I'll tell you what the why. You can even identify the why somewhat. The unintellectual why comes from the emotion of a desire to change the situation. Why should it be that way? Because when you're a kid, you know, you want to change. Why? Let's change. Things should change around for my benefit, to suit my emotions. That's a why that there's no answer for. No way out of it. See? The intellectual why is a what. The intellectual why is like this. When you ask why is it that God created this way, the question has to be converted immediately to what did God create? Did not God create a situation in which there is Bechira? And what does Bechira mean? That in the end is the cause of his own good, then it is the will of God that man should be the cause of his own good, then we know something already. It's not just a why is it? We know something. We know something about the will of God. You've opened up already a new door. You've shown something about the will of God. You've shown that the will of God is that man should be the cause of his own good. You see, that is methodological thinking. Now, in other words, yes, isn't it true that we found that premise here? We discovered a premise?
Yeah.
It's true, we definitely discovered a premise. Right?
Yeah, right.
Okay, what do I answer?
About the theory you just said, right?
Yeah.
That Hashem wants to, cause Hashem to be the cause, I mean, man to be the cause of his own good, right?
Right.
Okay, but doesn't that answer a why question too? So now we know why Hashem gave us the theory. Because he wanted us to. What?
You can ask another question. If you take that as an answer, then you're assuming that the goodness that you're talking about comes from man being the cause of them. Maybe it's even better just to have goodness. Goodness in general. I understand.
The question is, why did God give us the theory, right? So now I know, because God wanted man to be the cause of his own good. There's an answer.
Yeah, the question is,
why does God want the...
That's another question. The first question was, why do you want the fear? Now you're asking two different questions. I don't see the difference between why and what.
Let's leave it this way. It's true. The truth of the matter is, when we ask, why is it God's will to be that way, that's another question.
Is that question eventually lead up to why?
Philosophically, as soon as you go there, philosophically is a way out right there. Not just a way out, but it's a philosophy. Because the will of God, you see, you can't question the will of God, because you can only question something which exists because of a cause. You can question why is this table here? What is the definition of why is this table here mean? It means the table could have been here, it didn't have to be here. In other words, it has possible existence. The table has possible existence.
Still causes God's will, so therefore
the question is, Therefore, the question is, you understand?
God's will should be no other way.
See, the question is, why is the table here? It means it has possible existence. There must have been a cause, though, for the possible existence being there must have been a cause. Now, that is true in relationship to everything except God. Because when you go back to every possible existence, there has to be something which has necessary existence. Necessary existence means you keep questioning, well, why the thing is there, because the thing has no cause. Right? So, in relationship to God, why God is there, like when you're a kid, you ask, hey, who created God? Right? One day you wake up and say, yeah,
that's what you mean when you say why.
The question is a good one, but the answer is that the question has no basis for a simple reason, that the question doesn't make sense when you speak about necessary existence. It only makes sense when you speak about possible existence, you see? Now, there were those that argued from there. They said like this. They said, since God is one, that means that his will, he doesn't have different parts, like a will and then an intellect. But it's one essence. So therefore, the will of God is the same as his essence, right? Now, once you say the will of God is the same as its essence, just as soon as possible right now, we're not going to know what that means, but whatever that means, you can't ask anymore, why is God's will that it should be that way? Because that's the way it is. See, just like you can't ask, why is God here? Why can't you ask, why is God here? Because that's necessary existence. You don't hear that about possible existence. It's a legitimate question, but it's not a legitimate question in regards to something which is necessary. It has to be here. So why is he here? And that's part of his nature, is necessary existence. That's his existence. Different type of existence than we have. So therefore, God's will you can't question either. Because that is, in other words, the world is given. This is the given. You see, this is the given. So you can't change that. As long as the Ram doesn't accept that. The Ram brings it down. The Ram mentions it. But philosophically, it's sound. I mean, logically, whether you want to disagree with it or not, but it is logically sound and it follows the method. I mean, you can see the approach. It's 100% sound. And it answers every single question.
What question? Which
but it doesn't satisfy that emotion of why. You'll notice that. It doesn't satisfy the emotion of why. For a simple reason. Because the childish, the infantile, the non-intellectual why wants to change things. He wants to see the way things are. The intellectual why wants to define the way things are.
Why does the Rambam accept that?
For a simple reason. Because he has another problem there. But the problem is like this. Is God's will in line with the knowledge? Or not?
Yeah.
Here it is, huh? Okay, so it's one with knowledge, then we can ask further. So it must be based upon knowledge that, it must be based upon knowledge that no one will...
There is a cause.
So it has to be logical.
If
you're going to get stuck like this, are you going to say God's will is God's will in one with knowledge or not? Now if it's not in one with knowledge, you say God's not knowledge. Right? It does something which is not knowledgeable. If you're going to say it isn't one with knowledge, then we can ask why. There must be a reason. That's what Ram says. He says it is an approach, but he doesn't know that.
Why can't God?
Well, I'm not interested in the philosophy.
I am.
Both methodologically.
Why can't his knowledge be a knowledge of facts that have to be true?
Knowledge means that there's a reason, right? There's a reason. So that means that you should be able to understand the reason. Knowledge means it's in line with reason.
Yeah, but why can't you say that we can't know the reason of something?
Well,
we can't answer the question.
That
philosophy said that it doesn't have to be a reason. So that philosophy said that God is necessary existence.
Oh, why can't you change it to a reason?
That's the philosophy. That's the idea. Well, that's the Rambam and the Moreh Nevuchim show. The Rambam and the Moreh Nevuchim goes to great lengths to demonstrate through reason how it's impossible for man to achieve reason in certain areas. But he shows it to you through reason. That reason dictates the limitations of your own intellect, and therefore it's impossible for a person to go beyond certain areas in relation to God, in relation to metaphysics, but it proves it to you why it has to be that way. That's interesting, but the point I'm interested in is not so much the philosophy, I'm interested in the method. Now let's get back to his point. His point is like this. By the way, it is good to know the answer to that question of the cause of God. I mean, it's a simple thing that everybody should know. I don't know why you're not totally ungrateful, but some things are important. No, it's basic. Okay, so the question is, once again, that second question is a different question. When you ask, why is it that it's God's will that man should be the cause of his own existence? That's a different question. And I can prove it to you from the fact that, you see, according to this other way of thinking, right, the answer is very simple. Because once you question the will of God, it's the end of your question. It's no legitimate question. Because God's will is necessary, therefore this is the way things are. This is given, and you can't change it. Given this, God is the only existence that's necessary in all of the universe, beyond the universe, everything, right? So you can't question that. That's the given. But the answer shows you that question is a different question. Now, Let's go back again to the first question. The first question is, why is it that God created the world in this way, created man in this way, that we should have free choice? And we answer the question. What do we answer? How do we answer it?
He wanted man to have a choice to do his own good.
Man should be the cause of his own good. When you say that man should be the cause of his own good, when you answer that question, did you bring anything new to the...
just define the question.
But really, there's nothing new. You didn't introduce any new facts. Right. No new facts, nothing new. All you did was you just defined a question. That's all you did. And you defined a question, you can't always answer. Do you know how I'm trying to find out? You don't see it.
I don't see the difference between why and what, which is the whole base, the whole reason for this, right?
Did you agree that the question was answered?
What? The why question?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Was answered.
The question of the theory.
Right.
Yes, certainly.
That's what
my point is.
You agree it was answered, right?
Yeah.
You don't agree it was answered?
No.
If
you didn't add anything new and you just defined the question,
right.
You can define a question, you still don't have the answer. You didn't bring any new information.
Now, let's see if that's true. You say, if I don't bring any new information, I didn't answer the question. Well, take
the question again.
No, I mean, all you're doing is bringing the question into a form that you can use it.
Now, I want to say that this form that you bring it into, by bringing it into this form...
Why did God create man in this way, right?
Right.
And we're just saying is how God created man.
Right.
Right. We didn't answer why. In order to answer why, you have to say because this is what God intended, right?
Yeah, but the point is, but one second.
But the thing is that when you're going to think along these terms, the why question is not necessarily mean that the answer has to be because.
Right.
What else can you answer?
Let's say
changing the form of the question.
Yeah, I understand.
But now does
the question exist anymore? Does that question exist anymore?
No.
Now, the original question.
Because we defined it and threw it away. But one second.
But I say to a rational man, that question is nothing to deal with anymore. There's no reason to deal with that question. If you want to tell me that the question was never a question to begin with,
yeah.
Say, fine, very good, I agree with that. But I want to show you, in that case, I will simply rephrase what I'm showing you. I'm demonstrating to you how, with method, certain questions you don't have to deal with.
I agree.
All right?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. But that's important.
I agree with it, but I don't consider it a question of
method. That doesn't matter. Now just rephrase what I'm trying to demonstrate. You see, I'll just rephrase what I'm trying to demonstrate. That's good. The same thing in learning Gemara. How many times say, why should this be so? Why? You want to change the facts? We'll give it there. Don't look all over. Define what is it here. Sometimes you do need an extraneous theory. I wouldn't say every case. Sometimes you do need an extraneous theory. There's two types of theory. One type is a definition like this. This is not something which is a new theory. This is a definition. It has to be right. Can't be wrong. This is the most secure type of knowledge you could ever have. Because all you're doing is defining the phenomena. And this has been done countless times. I'll give you an example. I might have mentioned this case. With Aristotle, he saw a generation of Negroes. He saw a generation of whites from the Negroes. Offspring of the Negroes were white. And the next generation were black again. Black, white, and black. Now, what would the average guy ask?
Why is that so? What's the white and the black?
Where was the black in the white generation? In that white generation, he said, where was the black hidden? That's what he asked. Now, of course, he didn't know. We didn't know. They didn't know until Gregor Mendel that it's in the genes. And even Gregor Mendel didn't know what a gene was until today. But I want to show you that every one of these, and it was right. You see, Aristotle was right. Why was he right? Because just with his intellect, he was able to know, hey, there has to be something in here. That is black. Now, he didn't know what a gene was, but he was intelligent to know, ready to be on the trail of a gene. See? He knew it had to be there somewhere. It was closer than anybody else before. You follow what I mean? Then, when Mendel made those experiments, they also...
What else could he say?
What?
What else could he say?
No, I said, hey, why is that so? I mean, they're going to say, oh, that's unbelievable. But what do you do? He defines.
That's what's happening.
He just questions. He defines it. There is something. What do we see from this? What do we see? See, the other person is astonished. He stops with his astonishment. He stops. What happened to me? But what he did was another thing. He said, one second. What do we see from this? What do we see? We see that there must be black inside the white. It has to be that way. Because black comes out again. The question is, where is it? He changed the question. That little change makes all of the difference. That little change makes all of the difference.
Yes, I do.
But he didn't answer, right?
What?
He didn't answer the question, of course. He didn't know the answer, right?
But the question is a different one now. The question isn't just, hey, why is that so? It's not, that question's gone, why is that
it's
so?
It's something to look for.
The first question died. The first question's gone. The first question is, why is it so? The second question is, where is it? It's a different question. You understand what I mean? It's a different question. Knowledge has been gained. One step in knowledge has been gained. And it's definitive. It has to be so. No matter any type of discoveries they'll make from now to the end of the world, this statement of Aristotle 2,000 years ago is true and will always be true. Why? Because what is the definition? It uses method. And that's all I want to show you. That with method, if you have an accurate method, you can't be wrong, almost. In certain areas, you cannot be wrong.
All right.
Yes.
The question, his question was, where is the black in the sky? Shouldn't the question have been...
Good question. All right, now, another illustration. This is a sailor from, it's about Einstein, he's 5 years old. The compass. They apparently, naturally, intuitively, had this ability. That's the most amazing thing. A person should be born with a mind that thinks in this way. And it takes thinkers years to overhaul their whole mechanism of thinking. In order to think in the proper way. And this guy was 5 years old, he was totally natural, he's amazing phenomenon. He said, like, they showed him a compass, and he saw the ends of the needle pointing north and south. So he says, there must be something pulling at the ends of this compass that we can't see. What an average kid said, average kid, show an average guy, he's 25 years old, that's all. How does that work? But he wouldn't say that one step. There, what do we see from this? We see that there is something pulling at the end of the compass which cannot be seen. The eye can't see it. See, that's knowledge. That's the difference. That's method. That's intellectual thinking. That's the difference. And that's why that same approach is used in learning. That's in Torah. That's the same approach when Chazal gave the definition. What is it? That straight down one, the same approach in thinking. It's the only thing that there is. The only type of thinking that there is. There is, however, two, in this type of thinking, there are two breakdowns. See, this is important. One breakdown is the one I show you, the one with the definition. Definition can never be wrong. It's impossible to be wrong. It has to be right.
I know, you can make a mistake.
You cannot define the right phenomenon. I mean, if you are defining a phenomenon accurately, yeah. It has to be so. Like that case with Aristotle. Where is the black? It has to be there. There's no question about it. No matter nothing can change it. Same thing with the question of free will. It has to be so. The question is, it must be the will of God that man should be the cause of his own. But that must be, no matter what you're going to say, that it has to be so. That's the definition. You can't change it. But sometimes you're not so fortunate as to have a definition. Sometimes you have a theory. Theory is a different thing altogether. Theory means that you have a few phenomena and say, why does this work this way? And you give one possibility, one theory that'll explain all of them. Now there, it could be you're wrong. Because it could be the theory you gave, it could be another theory that you missed. In theory, you can make a mistake. In definition, you can't make a mistake. Because definition just defines a phenomenon. You're just saying, this is it. In theory, you could be making an error. Like if you go to a you learn through a series of halachas. You say, why are all these halachas study? You get one svar, one theory. The underlying concept is this. That's why all these result from this. The same thing you do in any other field. You say, you take a series of experiments. You say, what's the underlying theory? Is this. Explain all the phenomena. But a theory could be wrong because it's not a definition. You're not defining. You're giving a theory. Theory's different. That's why, for instance, Newton's theory, everybody knows that Newton's theory explained all the phenomena until in the 19th century when that certain phenomenon was light that Newton never saw it, he couldn't explain it. Along came Einstein, gave another theory, explained those phenomena that were not explained by Newton, but the new explanation explained everything. As a matter of fact, Einstein writes, he says he doesn't see why they couldn't see before him. Because even the old phenomena could have been explained that other way. But it just so happens, he says, that man, for some reason, is satisfied with one theory, you know, once he has one theory explained, he doesn't go any further. But Newton could have thought of that too. He didn't need a new phenomenon in order to think of it. Could have thought of the definition, the phenomenon, and would explain everything. So there, you see, there, in theory, you can't be wrong. Because there could be other theories. They claim, they say, I'm not a physicist, but they say that the difference between Einstein's first theory and his second theory, the first one was the special theory of relativity, and the second one was the general theory of relativity. They say the difference in the first one is a definition, and the second one is a theory. See, in the special, they say all they do is define what things are, plus you had to make new concepts in motion. New ideas that we didn't have until now, people weren't aware of. New ideas on how motion works, time, motion, different things. Now, what he did was merely to define the phenomenon. It was like a crazy thing. They had experiments that totally contradicted everything that we know about. They had experiments that show that speed, motion, plays no role in regard to light. It didn't make any sense. So he defined, what do we see from this? We see this is so and that is so. A whole new structure. And that can never be changed because all he did was define it. But in the second one, he wanted to give a theory to unite a lot of phenomena. So that can be changed. So while we employ both, we have to employ both, because man, he tries, attempts at least, could be right in theory, possibility that he could be right. So if you can't, you know the definition, so use theory. But in theory, there's possibility of being wrong, where the definition, you can't be wrong. If you define a phenomenon, you cannot be wrong. It has to be right. That's the difference. But I'm not interested in theory now, I'm interested in definition. I want to show what the approach is. Everybody see it? The illustration. See the illustration, Father? You'll never get anywhere in anything. I don't care what it is. I don't care what subject. I thought it could be the craziest thing. But for any subject, if you don't have this approach, you just lost. Just lost. Whether it's law, whether it's whatever it might be, it makes no difference at all. A person who has definition has such an advantage. It's almost like a guy has additional eyes that he can see. Everybody's blind. It's a crazy phenomenon. Crazy phenomenon. But it does take an over. You have to overhaul your thinking. You must work on changing your thing. If you don't do it, you'll never have it. Because naturally, for some reason, naturally, man doesn't go on that track. So Galileo Einstein was a different answer. But the average person goes directly in the opposite way. Now, when you give him a definition, he's not satisfied emotionally. See? What does that mean? He can't, his emotions are overpowering. He can't reason properly because he doesn't get that emotional satisfaction. What he should do, what a person should do, is when they overhaul their thinking, then the emotional satisfaction will follow, because their emotions are attached to the new approach of thinking, not to the infantile approach. The infantile, why should this be so hard? That's the cornerstone of the Dharma. And basically, that's the most important thing. They're applying to learning. It's the most important. Why is a client's Dharma different than anybody else's Dharma? Because a client has one thing. He defined what it said. Guys who ask him Kasha the Ram, why did the Ram write this? And he gave all kinds of answers. You know why I wrote that? Because he learned like this, he learned the Gemara and Shabbat, therefore it's conflict with Gemara and Satan, therefore conflict with Gemara, therefore conflict with Gemara, then this Gemara over here is difficult, what's another reason? He changed over whole shots to show you how the Rambam learned. This was basically the Torah that it was in existence before our time. And therefore the Rambam wrote this, everything is fine, just define the Rambam. The Chaim didn't do that, all he did was one thing. He said, why the Rambam wrote it, how the Rambam learned shots, we'll never know. The Rambam isn't here anymore, we can't ask him, So we don't know how we learn chess. Don't know. Never find that. Forget about trying to. How does Ram go against this Gemara? How does it possible Ram goes against this Gemara? So you work out all the Gemaras in Shas to show me why this Gemara should like Yilchasa, and the Ram's going to Halacha, all types of Hashemites. Tremendous amount of Torah that way. But our clients have one thing to that Torah. He said that Torah is unscientific. Why is it unscientific? Because he's dealing in a world that's totally unknown. He has no idea what Ram wants. He doesn't know what Ram wants. Well, you can know about the Ram is what's his definition. According to Ram, what kind of Halacha? That we can know. That's why they say before the Reb Chaim, the Machlekes Ram and Ravid, so Ravid has the Kashan Ram, so one guy tried to justify the Ram, and the other guy tried to justify the Ravid. or Frank at all. He was interested just by anybody. All he said was like this. What is the definition of Brahma? And this. According to the right, what's the definition? One know who's right. And they're probably either both do shas, so I don't know who's right. I'm not going to either way. And to try to figure out how each one learned shas with his eyes when he's gone, he's absurd. But what we can know from them is the concept, the way they define it. That we can know from them. So instead of running all around answering whys, we just took the facts and said, what do these facts say? What's the underlying theory here? Define the facts, you know. Many times, once you define the facts, all the kashas fall off. You see, Rambam, you understand the demon, you know, all people can look. Once you define the phenomena, everything's fine. No reason to go running around. That was really where Fang brought in the learning. One, of course, he wasn't the first one that had it. Rishonim had it. And take a look at Rishonim. See, Rishonim hit every key point. Of course, Rishonim will not put it the way Rambam does. Because Rishonim just wrote down, just like I mentioned, they just point to the definition. They leave you to define it. But every point that they hit is a pertinent theory. Every Tesis is just not mentioned like Tana. Right away Tesis is defined. What is Tana? This kind, that kind. Straight down to one. Of course, he doesn't put it on a silver platter. He just points out the facts which lead you immediately to those definitions. But Bali Tesis, Rishayim, all went that way. Every one is perfect. In Achrayim, you find it, take a look at you see. So now, maybe just on that way. Not trying to derogate a hymen, but we do see that they just do not conform with that method. An approach. So, what our client did was simply, he brought back to learning the old method, the old approach. The Rambam is different, there's no question about it. The Rambam is an old method of thinking of philosophy. Anybody that learns the Morning of Rambam sees how the Rambam was developed in method. And there's no doubt when the Rambam put in the mind of Rambam was the same mind he used when he went through shas, he categorized shas. The same intellect, the same master logician that worked in philosophy and mathematics and every science of the day, worked in Gemara too. So there's no doubt about it, he categorized shas in the same method that he has in the, you can see, Rambam, sure, you can see his method in the Gemara book. But, by the way, one time said that Rav Chaim knew every word in the Gemara book about that. Every word in the Gemara book was about that. So you'd be pretty sure that, I knew very well the approach in Rambam. Once that interview is opened up, the whole method is opened up, the whole shas is there. Different approach.
Last question.
Yes.
Originally, when you said you should ask the question what instead of why, right?
Right.
Sounds like you're putting those two, why and what, on the same level, and that if you ask the question why, it'll go in one direction. If you ask what, it'll go another.
Right.
Really the same level. You start at the same point. Okay? But it doesn't, it's really not that.
The what obliterates the why. The what obliterates,
right. Exactly. That's what, well, it seems like when everybody says, I don't know what the five are, something like what, why, where, and how, whatever, you know,
right.
And everybody seems to put them on the same plane. But really, why comes before all of them? Why is just the knowledge that there is something here I don't know. That's all
right.
It is.
That's awesome.
And but then the what and the how and all the things they're processing and finding out. So really, there's nothing wrong with asking why. I mean, I say when you gave that example of Einstein, right? I'm sure he asked why too. But then as soon as he said what, he started the process. So really, there's nothing asked.
I don't know. No idea.
I thought you said that you shouldn't ask why, you should ask what. But really, what is just one question after why. That's all. Why doesn't mean anything except that there's a question. I don't know. That's all.
Now, what do I do now?
So what are you saying that everybody doesn't do? They don't take the next step, right? So you're saying that, well, so what is the method then? That everybody takes that next step and nobody else does? Okay.
One example from Allah, in the Rambam. The Rambam, for instance, I think it's one of the best examples I have. The Rambam says by an Eved, Allah is being clean and Eved. One of the ways of being clean and Eved is through Shimush. The Eved works for you, he serves you. So the Rambam says, that's called Chazaka. In other words, the Eved, he carries a towel for you, right? He helps you, he does something for you. Shimush works for you. Servitude. The beginning of servitude is Nanapis. So the Rambam brings down, he says, if the Eved lifts up the Adain, He's kind of. Then he says the thing, and also if the other lifts up the other. So everybody has to catch it. They're saying, one second. The Eved lifting up the Adain, that's very good. Because that's Shemush, lifting him up, doing a service. Doesn't make a difference what service it is. But the Adain lifting up the Eved, it really is no good. Why isn't it good? Why isn't it good?
It's
not Shemush, it's Mirsham Hashem. If you want to say something, you want to say what it is, it's Chazaka. So therefore, the Eved serves you. So Shemush. Just like when you're using your field, that's Chazaka. So the same thing over here. When you're using your Eved, so that's Chazaka. So they ask Kasha, that's fine, but why did the Rambam put in? The claim, the Rambam says, in the Bia, Adain, Esa, Eved. That has no place over here. That has no place over here. That's a Hakinya Hagbar. That's not a Chazaka. So of course, everybody starts thinking, why did the Rambam put it there? He put it there because of Gemara, put it together over here, because of this, because of that. He really means it should be there, it should be here. All kinds of answers. Right, those are the type of answers which are exclusively why. It's an attempt to change the phenomenon. By the way, I noticed a lot of times shit. When was it? Yeah, when I gave the firm share, was it? No, the Rambam, that was the one. The Rambam in Yontif. When I asked you the chat in that Rambam in Yontif, everybody over here tried the one thing. They tried to just push around the facts that it shouldn't be a kasha. Instead of trying to define what the Rambam's saying, they're trying to define it. Everybody's trying to work a way out of the kasha. He means this, he means that. Instead of looking at that thing. Same thing over here. Rav Chaim gave one answer. The Rambam goes straight through clear. What's the answer? Of course, what would Rav Chaim do in the answer?
What is Chazaka?
The first step is like this. Instead of asking why, what's the first statement that you have to make? Clear statement, deductive, that you must make in regard to this Rambam. What's the first deduction you must make? It's all in one category, right? Apparently, the Rambam's definition of Chazaka is different than others. The whole question basis stems from one point. The question is saying, what is the definition of Chazaka? Shemush makes sense if he works for me. I left him up. Right? So our clients said, apparently, what do you have to say immediately? The question is based on one thing, because you're holding on to that definition of Shemush, you can't see anything, you're blinded. You must immediately say that Rambam had a different definition of Shemush. Get rid of that. That's not Chazaka according to Rambam. And in its place, when you get rid of it, what are you going to try to find?
A new definition
which includes what?
Phenomena.
Exactly, both phenomena. You see? This is intellectual thinking. This is thinking. This is why. This is moving. So the first thing you do is you say, one second, what's it? Shemush is out. That's the first deduction. Now something else has to be in here which satisfies both phenomena. And he came up with one definition. Definition, he said, is kibush. Kibush means conquest. So he says, in conquest, it works both ways. If he serves you as conquest, it's a manifestation of servitude. If you lift him up, it's also conquest. That's the book of
What does conquest mean? Who conquers who?
But you see the approach? Forget about the side question. I just want to show you, and I'm interested in the area. I want to show you the way of thinking. That's unbelievable. Now this tool is here. Anyone that wants it can use it. And I must say, without any flattery, but seriously, the guys in this year intellectually are, no question, a very high level. There's no one here that can't master it. No one here. Very, Baruch Hashem, we have very good minds in this year. Minds are very good. Serious. The intellectual power is great. And everybody here can master it. No question. It's not a problem. The guy doesn't have input, can't do it. Okay. Even the guy that doesn't have so much input, it's also worthwhile to change shy as much. There's only one thing, it's a laziness, which will prevent, there's two things, and the laziness is designed not to change it.
stay the same way, very comfortable, don't move. But overhaul your intellectual process. It's an energetic thing. I tell you, don't let that emotion stand in the way of reason. Overcome that.
Because he said he gave the wrong answer.
No. That's the fine ass model.
Yeah, that's the fine ass.
First thing he gave, I don't see how that answer gets wrong.
First one? First example? Okay. How to answer the question of why God did it this way?
Yeah. Just by getting rid of the question.
Just repeat the question and then the
question is, why did God create man in a way that he has to choose between good and evil? Why didn't he just make me good? I didn't have any problems. Why did God just make me good?
Right.
Why did he give me eight to heart?
Right.
Yeah. Right. Do that. Create another side of my personality. Right? Okay. Now, what's the answer? The answer is just define the phenomenon. Don't go anywhere. It's just define. Stay right here. Just define. What did he do? He made it in a way. They do it, of course, for wrong good. Okay, now this is what? All he wants. Is that
the
question?
I thought from the implication of the question, there's an obvious fact that there's choice, free will, but the question is more than that. The question is also asking, why did God grant man to have this desire for free will?
Right.
That's why you can answer right away that he wanted God to strive for this and that. I mean, that's an obvious assumption that there was free will. That's obvious in the question. The question still stands. Why does he have this free will?
Yeah,
I mean,
fine with free will,
that's right.
That's another question.
But when you ask the question, that's the first step you take. That it's free will. Now you're defining why it's free will.
Right.
But you didn't define what free will is yet, though.
You changed the direction of it.
Yes, you did. You don't know. That's the first thing you have to do is define free will. When you ask
the question,
I asked the question, why did God grant man free will? See, God answered because he wanted him to strive
to be the cause of
his
own good.
So, I mean, you know, like, when that question, it's not just that question. You define it. There's more to that question than this.
That man has free will.
Oh, that's a different question.
Of course you can. It's not that
the
point
of course, and you can't question By answering that question, you get rid of that question, and you have another question. It's true, you have another question.
By defining what free choice is that man is the cause of his own actions, right? So they say, all right, then you already answered the first question by saying the reason God created man this way is to be the cause of his own goodness, right? Then you got to answer the question.
Same thing we prepared for yesterday that we should prepare for today.
You have to finish up.
We didn't find out yet.
If you define repeats in one of two ways, if you define repeats as limited to punishment of a rival, you're in trouble when it comes to the other.